Radio Gorgeous. Gorgeous lives. So today on the Radio Gorgeous Red Sofa, I am excited to have a true cabaret star here. She has been treading the boards for over 5 decades and worked with John Cleese, Roger Moore, Ronnie Corbett, Sir David Frost, and has never forgotten Les Dawson and Bog Monkhouse. We'll hear more about them later. She's a regular on the London cabaret scene. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Amy McDonald.
Hello, Josephine. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So, Amy, tell us about your show. What happens in it?
Well, my show... So I would say it's a musical biography, really. I talk about my career from the beginning, from because I started off in Paris as a young dancer, Las Vegas, and came up that route, the dancing route, and then sort of diversed into acting and singing and all of that. So my show is really about my career, and I slot appropriate songs into it, songs from musical shows, and, you know, songs that people know, but generally from musicals, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Sondheim, all these wonderful composers I do.
And do you dance? I mean, are you still treading the boards, Amy?
No, darling, no. I hung up my shoes quite a long time ago, actually.
So how do you keep fit now?
Well, I walk a lot. I went through a phase of going to the gym, but I found that so boring.
It's,
I mean, really boring.
Isn't it?
I know. So I just, about 10 years ago, I made up my mind to walk. I'm going to walk, you know, whenever I have to go somewhere. And that seems to, touch wood, do it for me.
Fabulous.
But
I
think probably being a dancer in my youth, I think, has helped as well.
Yeah, because I've noticed you sit up straight, you know, just those little things. Yeah. You know what I mean? No, because, it makes such a difference, kind of the way you sit, the way you project yourself.
Yeah,
you've got to kind of raise your head up.
That, I think, is because when you start as a dancer, I mean, you're 3 years old when you start dancing lessons.
That when you were? So,
yes.
You were three?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So you come up, you know, that sort of stuck in your brain, you know, the way you do this and that and the next thing. So
let's talk about your life. So did you go to drama school or how did it work?
I did go to drama school, but I did it in a very strange way because I started off as a dancer and through school
Was that your mum encouraging you?
That was my mum, yes.
Was she a stage mother? I hope so.
A bit, yes. She would have loved me to have been the next Margot Fontaine.
Oh, okay. So she liked serious dance.
I think it was a bit like that. Mm. But I had other ideas. When I got to 14, I thought, no, don't want to do that. I wanted to do more modern dancing and that kind of thing. But yes, that's how it all started. And then I sort of left at the age of, I left school 16. I was in Paris with a modern dance company, yes, at a nightclub called La Nouvelle-Ève.
Fabulous.
So
now,
that's
when
how
was,
it all
was that,
started.
Was that the 60s then?
That was the 60s, yes. 59-60. And then I went to Las Vegas and I was there.
Dancing in Las Vegas
dancing
again?
Dancing.
Okay, and what sort of show?
Well, the first show we did was, I was with this company called Le Charlie Ballet. So we went over there to the El Rancho Vegas. Now, during my time there, I met someone. I wasn't supposed to, because he used to really look after us. Like, it was a bit like being at boarding school. We weren't allowed to do this and that.
The thing is, he didn't want you to get pregnant. Must have been the main worry, you know.
Well, yes, but do you know something? I remember this well. He had to take my mother to Bow Street and promise the magistrate, whoever it was, he would bring me back in one piece. And they had to put, and there was me and a couple of other girls that were under 18.
There was massive pressure on
her. Anita Harris was one of them.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant.
He had to promise faithfully. Yeah. So he was neurotic about whatever we did, you see. But I somehow managed to meet someone.
And you fell in love.
And
I've met your daughter.
Yes, and of course you have. Now she's a product of that. She was born in Las Vegas, you see.
That's so glamorous. So what did your husband do then?
I don't know. He was a musician. See, he was in the show, you see.
Ah.
But
so how old were you when you had a baby?
Oh gosh, I was 18.
Oh my
God. I know.
So what happened? You had to come back. So you did get pregnant.
I came back.
You did all the things that, you know, your mother didn't and the man didn't want you to do. So you must have been, tell us about coming back and having to tell your mother.
No, but I did do it properly because we got engaged and then I came home.
Okay, that's kind of legal. That legalizes it.
Yes. Yeah. And then mother thought to herself, well, if, you know, if I don't allow her to get married, then she's going to go off and do it anyway. Do you know what I mean? So she had to sign the form, so she did. So I got married in Las Vegas at 5 o'clock in the morning in a little chapel called the Wee Kirk. It was a sort of, I associated the Wee Kirk with the fact that I'm half Scottish, you see. So I picked that one. I mean, we were driving up and down the strip looking for somewhere to get married. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre.
I love why it was 5 in the morning. Was that when you'd all finished work?
Exactly. We were doing 3 shows a night. And I finished before Jimmy did. And I went to his place. He was playing. At this point, I was at the Dune and he was at the Sahara, I think. And we went to get him in the morning after my show. Then we decided to do it then and there because I was kind of backing off a bit.
Yeah, arming and
I was going
yeah.
to,
getting
in fact,
feet.
Josephine, to tell you the truth, I wanted to meet him that night to say, no, would you please wait until I got this dancing bug out of my system, you see?
I suppose you were scared your career was going.
Well, it wasn't so much that. I just started my career and I was really enjoying it. And I thought, you know, you get married. And in those days, it was very different to now, you know.
Yes, because you're meant to get married and become a housewife.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And then you're going to have babies and this is going to happen and that's going to happen. So that morning, I met him to actually ask him to wait. Then he was I wouldn't say forceful. He was persuasive. And he started all this with, oh, you can't go back to England. You know, I'll never see you again and all that stuff, you know. And of course, that did it. And he said to me, look, I think you're a bit nervous about it. Let's go and get the license and then you'll feel better. And I thought to him in my silly head, I thought, okay, there's no harm in getting the license.
You didn't really know what the license was.
Exactly. So this is what I imagine. I know it's Las Vegas, but we're talking 4 o'clock in the morning here. So we go to the town hall to get the license, you see. And we did. We got the stupid license because, you know, in Nevada, you can get married when you're 12, right? But you can't have a drink until you're 21. I mean, it's bizarre. I know. So anyway, got the license. So coming out, I just said to him, I said, do you know something? If we don't do it now, I don't think I'll ever do it. Right, he said. So we went down the street. We found his best friend, another trumpet player called Tootie. So we got hold of Tootie. We got hold of my friend, Jenny. She was watching Sinatra do a late night show. So she was coming out of the show and I grabbed Jenny and said, come on, you're coming to a wedding. I mean, it's so bizarre.
Fun.
I haven't told this
fun.
Story, you know, for about 30 years.
Great. Well,
I mean, this is extraordinary.
I'm pleased. We're exposing some stuff on Radio Gorgeous. Now, how long did the marriage last? I've got to ask.
Guess.
6 months?
Well, it lasted long enough. We got married in the March, and then the following year, Lisa was about 9 months when we came back to England.
Okay, so
it didn't work.
So 18 months work. Was quite a long time.
For Vegas, that's right. And at the age of 16, yes, it is, actually.
Felt like a hell of a long time. So you gave birth in America.
In Las Vegas,
which must have been quite scary, actually, because your mum wasn't around, was she?
Well, no, she did come over before. She came over and stayed with us for a couple of weeks before, But no, after that, it was,
So what did you do with a baby in Las Vegas? And, you've got a bit of a jelly tummy, you've given birth. What, you didn't know how. How did you look after the thing?
The thing.
The baby. I mean, I remember I gave birth, I had no idea what to do.
No, you're right.
I didn't know how to pick up the baby. Right. I didn't know how to change a nappy.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. Do you want to know, really?
Yeah, we do.
I bought a book. And the book was called Dr. Spock's.
Yes, right? Very famous.
And that became my Bible. I mean, anything that happened, I would look up the book. Anything. And that was, she was a Dr. Spock baby, I always say that. Oh, and she never gave me any trouble. She slept through the night. She was happy. She was giggly. She was, she was never a sort of annoying baby, like always wanting something. Mm-hmm. Never. So I used to really plug that book, at
you
that
still
point.
Are.
Well, I haven't spoken about, I don't even know if it's still around, the Dr. Sprock.
I'm sure if it's out of print, we can get it on for Radio Gorgeous listeners.
I think if it's still around, go and get it if you've got a new baby.
Okay, so you...
So there I am.
Yeah, there you are in Las Vegas with a book, a husband and a baby.
And
what did you do?
Wobbly Tommy, I'll tell you something weird. Well, you see, I danced right up until I was, I think I was about 7 months pregnant.
Wow.
And we were doing, in the show, we did a 20-minute can-can, okay, and a 15-minute Charleston. Okay. So, I know. And what happened was I didn't come out.
No, because your first child, you don't, do you?
No, but my bum got bigger. And I remember there was another number we did. We called it the Cambodian number, which was all very Eastern. And I had to be carried down this huge staircase on a boy's shoulder. I wish this was on television because you could, you know, you've got to picture this. So I'm sitting in this Cambodian pose, you see, on this boy's shoulder. Now, as I got more and more, the bum got bigger and bigger. The poor boy, his hand had to go further up because I had his shoulder and his, my bum was on like that. And then gradually his hand had to move a bit further out as my bum got bigger.
So actually harder and harder. He had to be stronger and stronger,
yes,
didn't he?
Yeah. So then, so in the end, I had to have another boy as well. So the two of them had to come down carrying me in the middle.
Hysterical. I'd love to.
And then the last show, the last performance I did, and it was in the can-can, we all do, you know, the jump split in the end. And I was on the end of the row. I did the jump split and I went, oh, and I couldn't get up. And this hand came out from the wings and grabbed me by the ankle, pulled me off.
Is that when you knew you better stop?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Well, we did do another. It was a sort of French ballet we did. And one of the characters was, she was supposed to be a 12-year-old who'd written this novel. It's a sort of Francoise Sagan kind of thing. And the person that played this didn't do any dancing at all. They just came out on the passerella, sat down as if they were reading from the book. And then the ballet went on at the back.
Is that a role for you then?
Yes. So after that happened, so I used to come out and they gave me this sort of baby doll night.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
Yes, and the pigtails.
Oh, wonderful.
And the baby doll night.
And no one could tell you were kind of 9 months
pregnant. No, and I did say to the doctor, I told him what I was doing, you know, I said, I'm doing quite an energetic show and everything. And I said, do you think it's okay for me to do this? And he looked at me, he said, honey, you are very pregnant. He said, nothing's going to shift that. So that was that. So, and Lisa did come out kicking.
Radio Gorgeous. Okay, so you had the baby, but you were in Las Vegas, but could you work immediately? How did it work?
Well, again, you see, I do think it was something to do with the fact that I was so young. I think your body kind
just
of snaps.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's harder as you get older. Mm. But also, during my pregnancy, I actually lost weight, which
too
is
much.
Weird. Yeah. And again, the doctor said to me, she said, don't worry about that. He said, you know, you've got to put 7 pounds as the baby and 7 pounds as the afterbirth. So anything else is your body, you see.
Yeah, so you weren't
so
bothered.
That was fine. And part of the reason for that was the smells. I couldn't
oh, I remember
smell
that. Yeah.
Cooked food.
Yeah, yeah.
And I lived on watermelon and yogurt for about 6 months.
Good
so
job.
When I, after the baby, I remember I got out of bed and to get my shoes on, even my feet had lost weight. So you see, that's
wow.
what happened. So
wow.
everything went like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I was back at work in about 3 weeks.
Wow. So
I had a wonderful girl
I was called say,
Lois.
Looked after the baby.
Yes, Lois used to come, and when I was doing the show, I would have Lisa all day. So, you know, when
Lovely.
Lois would come in and sort of, while she was asleep, really. Mm. So it worked out fine. Yeah, that was good.
So
yeah.
then, did you split up while you were out there then with your husband?
We split up once, right? And then I was silly. I took him back.
Yeah, that's all. We all, we've all done that.
Well, you know that.
Yeah.
And of course, how do you say, you know, the man's on his knees crying his eyes out,
yeah.
don't leave me, don't take my baby away and all that
yeah.
business. And I would have actually stayed in Las Vegas, just not necessarily married to him, but I would have stayed there if it hadn't been so, it wasn't very nice, the marriage, it really wasn't. I don't want to go into that, but it wasn't very nice. And I just wanted to get away. But I was also a bit scared of him. And what I finally did was I sort of pretended that I was going taking Lisa back to see the grandparents, but I didn't intend to come back.
Very
so he
clever.
Let me go.
Yeah.
He made me buy a round trip ticket.
Yeah. He knew, yeah, something was
And
up.
Then I thought, okay. And of course, I never heard from him again until she was about 4, I think she was. And then
wow.
I suddenly heard from him.
Wow. But you came back to London and you carried on
London.
Your career. Fast forwarding to the 70s. You were starting to do Monty Python, I remember. Is that right?
Yes. Well, what happened was when I first came back to London from Vegas, I mean, I was a dancer. Mm. So I auditioned for a show, an American show called On the Town. And I thought, I was used to working with American choreographers.
Yeah.
So I auditioned for that show. I happened to look like somebody that played a small part on Broadway. And the director was Joe Layton. He asked me to read at that audition. And he gave me the part.
Fabulous.
So I found myself on the West End stage. And then I thought, okay, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'd done elocution at drama school, but mm-hmm. then I went to drama school while I was in that show.
Fabulous.
You see?
Wow, you put the effort in. You thought, I'm going to really go for this.
Well, yes, I didn't. You see, I loved the fact that it could make people laugh. I found out in that show, I didn't realise, because it was a sort of comedy, musical comedy. And this character, I remember the first time I did it and got to the other end of the stage and they were laughing. I thought,
fabulous.
Oh, that feels good.
Yeah,
I want to do it again.
Yeah,
you know, it's
that
sort of thing.
Yeah. So you became a comedy actress then, did you?
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, I did a lot of soubrette work in cabaret, because in London, in the 60s,
there was
a lot
supper clubs,
of nightclubs.
Sort of. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I became a soubrette as a singer-dancer.
Oh, I don't know that word. Is it
right.
A French word?
Yes.
Yeah.
A soubrette is a dancer who sings.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, she has dancers behind her. She sings
sort of funny, entertaining songs.
Yeah, point numbers, they're called. Okay.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing around the West End. And then one night, John Cleese and Marty Feldman came in to see the show. And that's how I got on television. They were doing a show called At Last the 48 Show and asked me if I wanted to get involved. Yeah, to me, I didn't even have a television set in those days.
Yes, yes.
You didn't know
who they were either.
No, it was a job. And hey, lo and behold, it sort of started something for me. After that, I didn't really look back.
Oh.
And I went from show to show and all of that and started doing films as well.
Were you peaking then? When was your kind of peak time, would you say?
My peak?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. I don't know.
When did your career feel like, I'm really on top of this?
The most exciting moment in my life in the business was definitely opening night in Lady Be Good. Because when I was a kid dancing, I really wanted, because I used to go and watch all these MGM musicals.
My favourite thing in the world
exactly.
are musicals. Yeah.
And it was so joyful and whatever was happening at
Technicolor,
home. It was just wonderful. Yeah. So I'm not really a terribly ambitious person, but I did have one ambition, and that was to star in a musical. And yes, I did it. And that was the most exciting moment for me in the whole business. And it was the opening night of Lady Be Good in the West End. And that was
Is that about Billie Holiday?
Wonderful.
Is it about Billie Holiday? And why am I thinking
No.
connection with black music, people. Lady Be Good.
Sweet and lovely. Yeah. But that was originally done by Fred Astaire and Adele Astaire, brother and sister. And I did it with Lionel Blair.
Oh my God, you two would look fabulous together.
And the lawyer was played by Joe Baker, who was a very lovely comedy actor. He went to America after that.
And how long was your run?
That ran for about a year and a half.
Oh, in which theatre?
At the Savile Theatre in Shaftesbury Avenue, which I think now it's a cinema. It was just off the avenue. Yes, that was the most exciting part.
Yes. And what's the most kind of fame-filled moment, you know what I mean? One that you can really show off about all the famous people you met.
Fame-filled?
Yeah.
Oh dear, fame-filled. Okay. I remember seeing Command Performance, right?
At the Palladium, darling. At the Palladium.
No, actually, I've done a couple.
But
this one was special because I found myself standing on the stage with, when she came on at the end, with the Queen Mother, who went down the line, right? And then also in the cast was Ethel Merman.
Wow.
Who was the queen
of
musical theatre.
Yes.
And there was little me standing there watching the two queens.
It's
that
fabulous.
Was a bit of my sort of fame, people. Oh, yes, and I did find myself in a car with the Beatles when the car suddenly got filled with smoke and we all had to get out.
So why were you in there, just for fun or socially?
No, what it was the premiere of their first film, A Hard Day's Night,
Hard Day's Night.
And at the time, I had a friend, and we were just good friends, we weren't anything spectacular, an actor called John Junkin, and he was in the film, and he just asked me if I would like to go to the preview. They were having a preview of this film. So I thought, oh my God, yeah, you know, of course I want to go. You know, the Beatles, hello. So we were all meeting at John's house in Weybridge. So we had to meet up there, and then we all got into his Rolls Royce and we set off, you know, for London. So we're going down the motorway and suddenly everybody's going, what's that smell? You see?
And you're with the Beatles.
The Beatles are all there. And Jane Asher, wow. She was going out with Paul McCartney. Yeah. And there was somebody else. Oh, Patty Boyd, that's right.
She's beautiful.
And there was Patty and Jane and me, and then the guys. And Cynthia, she had to stay at home because the baby was quite small.
She always had to stay at home.
I know, we won't go down that road, but anyway. So we're in the car and suddenly something's wrong with it and smoke is coming out of it. So the chauffeur had to pull over, you see, into the thing. So we all had to get out.
Were you on the A3 or something?
We were, down from Weybridge, whatever, you know. So I just get...
I love it. Standing on the side of a road, all these famous people. You
covered in smoke.
Oh, fabulous.
And if you saw the cars going past, imagine.
Yeah, they...
And the eyes go... Yeah. I mean, it's a wonder there weren't more accidents, really, or any accident. I don't think there was an accident. But do you know what
the
I mean?
The most famous people in the world you were standing on the curb with.
I know, the Beatles, hello. And the other thing I remember about that was John, on his wall, he had a gold disc, you know, because he just got a gold disc for something. And underneath was a plaque in quotes from his auntie Vi, I think it was Auntie Vi.
Yeah, she's the famous one, Vi, yeah.
Yes, and it said, the guitar is great for a hobby, John, but you'll never make a living at it. Isn't that wonderful? And he had it in gold, you know, and that stuck in my mind.
Fabulous, fabulous. And then I asked Amy, how did she get into cabaret?
I stopped doing cabaret for quite a long time. When I was doing television and plays, I went around the country doing plays and did a lot of drama as well. The cabaret thing started really because I've got a relative who has Alzheimer's and she's in a care home. So I started visiting care homes and, of course, reading a lot about the whole thing because she was very close to me. So one of the big things I realised very early on was the music association with people with that problem. They love music.
And if they hear music from their past, then do they regress back to happier times?
Exactly. Mm. The fascinating thing is they remember the lyrics. They might not remember what they had for breakfast or even who you are, but they remember lyrics. It's extraordinary.
So have you performed in care
homes? So I started doing that.
How rewarding.
And then it escalated. And I've got a lovely man in my life who encouraged me.
Oh.
I said, I can't start doing that now, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, you can. You've had an interesting career. Yes, you've got to do your own show. So that's how that started.
Yeah.
And I still do the odd care home thing. But that's how my act came
and
about.
Where are the places people can see you? Where do you mostly perform?
Well, now, you see, I've started doing this whole new circuit, thankfully, has sprung up again in London like it was in the 60s and 70s, which is lovely. You know, I've done the Pheasantry a few times and the King's Road. I've done the Crazy Cot, which is a lovely room, and I can't wait to go back there. So I'm hoping very soon.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous, Amy McDonald. I mean, to think that this is probably... I bet most of these stories aren't even in the cabaret show because you've got so bloody many. Thank you. Thank you so much. And by the way, I must tell you, you're so camp too, my darling.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you very much, Josephine. But thank you for having me. Lovely to meet you. And good luck.
Produced for Radio Gorgeous by Radio Gorgeous Productions and edited by Christine Ben-Ame.